Step right up, step right up. Hear the tale of the Festival of Returned and enter a bizarre world where the rules of life and death as you know them do not apply. Come and hear a tale of corpses and madness on tonight's Midnight Sideshow.
Dear listener, if you find yourself in possession of this recording, know that the file you listen to right now was narrated by a dead man. By dead, of course, you might assume that I mean someone with hours or minutes left to live, but you would be mistaken. I am narrating from beyond the grave. You are not, however, hearing the words of a paratus, as you might expect, but rather the words of a corpse that's still rotting. The reason my body wasn't prepared properly to be one of the paratus: I was murdered, and my body was never found. Of course, if you're listening to this, hopefully you've found my body. I hope that means in the days of the next festival, I might feel the sun and wind once more, and maybe I will be free to visit my family again. And just maybe justice will come to my killer. But until then, I decay, both in body and in spirit. If you have the time, please hear the tale of my death. I can still feel the wind on my face from that day. We rode our bikes down the dusty, lazy street after the last day of school before the festival began. This year, the 3 days of the festival began on a Wednesday, which meant this was the rare occasion on which we only had to endure 2 days of school before the festival, which would then turn into a 5-day weekend for us. Naturally, we were all more than excited for the break, as we had just all knocked out midterm tests from college and could use a break. Looking around, you could tell the festival was right around the corner. People's homes were either already set to receive their visitors, or on the off chance that a home wasn't already prepared, you could see people scrambling to set up their preparations. Since those that return are able to find their way to their living relatives psychically, the festival was never really optional for anyone, and it was kind of a jerk move not to prepare. They were your relatives, after all, your family. Families had split from tensions around a poorly prepared visit, and it was one of the top causes of divorce, according to a paper I'd read somewhere. I'd always wondered how they found their way back when I was alive. Of course, now it's a simple matter for me, but as simple as it is, it's not one I'm sure I could explain to someone among the living without spending several hours on the subject. But I digress.
How come he never has any family over? Daniel asked, interrupting my inner debate on how the paratus found their way back to their living relatives.
What?
Old man Jack at the end of the street. You know, Jack at... I know who you mean, you don't have to call him that.
What? He is one, though. You know it, I know it, Yasmin knows it.
Yasmin nodded, quiet as we rode. She wasn't as loud or obnoxious as Daniel, which is why I had a crush on her.
He threatened to shoot me when I went onto his property to catch my dog a few weeks ago. He's a jerk, Daniel continued, shaking his head. I think the name fits.
Yeah, Yasmin said, half nodding.
It makes me wonder why he never has any family over, Daniel said, contemplatively.
Do you mean family, like as in living family? Or do you mean...
Zombies, dude, obviously. I mean, it's not like he ever has... Whoa! Daniel!
Yasmin slammed on her brakes and began to yell, sending a shock through my body. I'd never seen her this upset.
You cannot call the paratus that.
But I can call the rotters that.
Daniel!
Yasmin screamed, face red.
You cannot speak that disrespectfully of any returned, whether they've been made paratus or not. You know what I mean. Everyone deserves respect.
Yasmin pounded her pedal suddenly, puffing and riding hard ahead of us.
Hey, what's the big deal? They're just zombies, yes! Daniel yelled down the street, drawing the attention of several neighbors who balked and huffed angrily at the slurs Daniel was yelling. One mother with a young child covered her kid's ears and dragged her inside.
Mommy, what's a zombie?
We don't talk like that in this house, Meredith. That's a very bad word. Daniel's face flushed red.
I don't get the big deal.
Dude, you're such a jerk. Maybe your nickname should be Jack.
Shut up, Budwipe. Daniel said, huffing off in another direction. I never did like Daniel very much, but he raised a good point that left me pondering for the rest of my ride home. Why did Old Man Jack never have any visitors? Especially on the 3 days of the Festival of Return. I sat at dinner, quietly pondering the same question hours later. Every once in a while, my mind wandered back to Yasmin's outburst. It was sort of attractive. But eventually, I'd find my way back to my questions. There was a festival special on TV playing in the living room, about the process used to convert a corpse post-death into Paratus, whether recently deceased or a long-lost body, to maximize their comfort and ability post-death for the festival, but I wasn't really listening. I'd gotten through about the first 15 minutes of it, and then gotten lost in my own curiosity once more. Why did Jack never have any relatives show up on the Festival of the Returned? It didn't make sense. We never saw his relatives arrive on the first day of the festival when everyone shows up, and we never saw him with any guests, either around his yard or in his home. I'm embarrassed at that second admission, but he was very bad at keeping his blinds closed. I decided to go out and see Daniel and Yasmin and see what they thought of all this. I quickly finished my dinner and wrapped up my share of festival prep, preparing fresh clothes for Grandma and Uncle Randy when they arrived and decorating the ofrenda with objects from their living days. Obviously, it would be a huge insult to them if they came by early and their icons weren't on display. It's the number one way a family has been outed as someone that hasn't prepared. I wasn't in charge of welcoming them, though. That fell to my sister. So once I'd finished, I took off. Call me if they get here early, I yelled as I left, to no one in particular, and then stopped to check my phone charge. I was notorious for leaving my phone next to dying and then not being able to use it when I needed to. I wish that was the worst of my problems still. I suppose if it were, I wouldn't be able to narrate this. Again, I digress.
So I think since I live directly next to him, I can safely say he never has family over,
Daniel said while chewing on a pizza roll. He was never good at manners, hence his slurs earlier in the day. Yasmin was here, but she was quiet. It was hard to tell if she was back to her normal self or if she was still angry at Daniel, so I tried to keep the conversation going. Yeah, setting that disgusting open-mouth chewing aside, Daniel has a point. Have you ever stopped and watched his house, though, for the full festival?
I did, actually, he said, triumphant. Last year I watched, and nobody came or went.
And he actually put up barriers to keep people out, he said, pointing at his window.
Look, he did it again this year.
Me and Yasmin raced to the window and shoved our faces up against the glass, and quickly realized that Daniel had made it up. It was about this time I realized I almost knocked his tiny camera off the window. What's this? I asked, picking it up and waving it in the air. Do you really think you should be recording the neighbor?
Yes, Daniel said, replacing the camera. I'm trying to get it recorded this time as proof. If nobody comes or goes, I'm going over there tomorrow to investigate.
What? We both yelled in unison.
You heard me, he said, popping another pizza roll into his mouth.
I turned back to the window and almost bumped heads with Yasmin, finding myself face to face with her inches away. I could feel her breath on my lips. Those lips I'd wanted to kiss so many times. We locked eyes for what seemed too long, and then I pulled away. At this point, I realized I'd almost shoved my hands into her chest and quickly dropped them. Yaz continued to gaze, then turned back to the window. I felt my face flush and followed suit before Daniel could see it. Did she realize it? Did she think I did it on purpose? My mind erased, now distracted by the thought.
realized after a few moments the room was very quiet. I turned to see that Daniel was gone and Yasmin was staring at me. "You're blushing," she said, gently touching my cheek with one finger. Yasmin was quiet, but she was observant. She tended to notice things and connect the dots way faster than Daniel. Sometimes even faster than I did. I began to panic.
"Why is that?"
she asked. The directness of the question caught me off guard, and I gasped for words. Yasmin slowly put a finger to her lips, then gently smiled and asked,
"You really want to be talking about this when Daniel comes back in?"
I laughed. "I take it we'll talk more about it later. Where exactly did Daniel go?" I was distracted.
"You were? By what?"
Yasmin asked, coyly batting her eyes. She was drop-dead gorgeous, and she knew it. It was hard to tell if she was playing with me or if she liked me the same way I liked her, and I tried to put it out of my mind, but her dark hair and eyes kept me locked in. After a beat, she turned away from the window, leaned on her elbows against the sill, and huffed. "Daniel went to get more pizza rolls." That seems problematic.
"What do you mean?"
Yasmin teased and then pretended she was talking with her mouth full.
"I'm certain the Jack never has neighbors over for the festival, so..."
I could barely contain my laughter, and after a bit, Yasmin stopped.
"Seriously," she said, "if I have to listen to him talk through another mouthful, I'm going to throw up. And I haven't eaten anything for several hours," she said, shaking her head. This was the most I'd ever heard her talk since I'd known her. Was she opening up to me? Was she nervous? We knew just about everything there was to know about each other, but she never talked this much. I took advantage of the situation, trying to be sly, feeling bold.
"If you're asking me to take you to dinner, I'll do it," I said. Yasmin straightened up, rigid, and looked directly in my eyes and inhaled sharply, shattering what I thought was boldness into dust.
Are you serious?" she asked, eyeing me.
We don't have to. Yasmin grabbed me by the hand and started to pull me out of Daniel's room into the front door.
"Yeah, let's go before he comes back with those stupid pizza rolls," she said softly, trying to avoid being heard.
My heart began to pound.
I was about to go on a date with Yasmin.
You might be wondering why I recount my moments with Yasmin here. The words of a dead man. By the end of my telling, hopefully, it's very clear.
After we'd gotten a few blocks away from Daniel's in silence, Yasmin spoke up. "So, I asked before, what made you blush,
She turned to me and raised one eyebrow.
"Come on, we're both adults here. You can be honest with me."
The truth is, I had started to blush when I had almost turned and grabbed her chest, thinking it was the ledge of the window. But I wasn't about to open with that, even though it was the truth.
I think you're really attractive, Yas. I like you." "Why is that? What do you like about me?" I knew what she was getting at, and I wasn't about to admit how insanely hot I thought she was. So I went with the other primary factor in my attraction.
"I really like the kind of person you are. Daniel's kind of crazy, and you're sort of the opposite. You're calm, reasonable, sweet."
Yasmin blinked rapidly, clearly taken aback by this.
"You...
what?" she asked, clearly shocked. This bolstered my courage. "Your heart is so beautiful, and I'm really into your personality and the kind of woman you are." Now Yasmin was blushing and staring at the street as we walked.
"Listen, Ben, I have a lot of boys who like me.
I know, and I don't expect that I've got any chance with you, but I'm not finished, she said softly. I have a lot of boys who like me, and they like me for a lot of things that have nothing to do with my personality. I'm sure they like you for more than those things, yes? I don't doubt that. No. No, Ben, they wouldn't. They haven't. My heart sank. What was she trying to tell me? Ben, you believe that people are naturally good, right? You told me once you believed in the teachings of Rousseau. Correct. Sure. Why do you ask? You know, I used to think that too. I used to think people were good. Yasmin suddenly stopped walking and stared at the ground. Her fist was clenched, shaking. 2 nights ago, I went out with some friends to a party, and they all took off and had their own fun. It wasn't so bad at first. Until... Tears began to form in her eyes and rolled down her face. Now she was whispering. Did you know that 1 in 3 women is a victim of sexual assault, Ben? Guess which one of those 3 you're talking to right now? Her chest began to heave and her tears began to flow freely down her face. People are not good, Ben. I had no words. I opened my arms to offer an embrace, which she ran to, almost knocking me over. She continued, but maybe some people are good. She began to wipe away some of her tears. I have lots of boys who are interested in me, but maybe one of them is a man. I think maybe. After all, he wants me for my heart and not my body, right? I blinked hotly, realizing she was talking about me. Can we just stand here for a moment? I just feel safe with you. My heart stopped, and I tried to speak, but could only nod my head. I've seen the way you look at me, but I didn't know why you looked at me like that. And after what happened, I wanted to know. It was at this moment that I decided that conversations about how attractive I found her to be physically were postponed indefinitely. After a few moments of silence, we began to talk again and walk, this time holding hands. Yasmin began. So obviously, you must think I'm ugly since you like my personality so much, she teased. I didn't know what to say. Oh, no, I think, Yasmin rolled her eyes at my stammering and made herself clear. I was joking, Ben. I have seen the way you look at me, remember? I've seen that look before, and not all of it is about personality. So she did know. After a moment of silence, I asked, and yet, you still trust me? After a beat, she responded, people who care about personality first do it because they see each other as personalities first. You can like my body all you want. I know it's my big, sexy brain that you're after anyway, she said, back to being coy, sarcastic, and flirtatious again. Back to being the new Yasmin, which prompted me to ask, hey, yes, for as long as I've known you, you've always been a very quiet person. But you've suddenly become really talkative and expressive. I don't think that's a bad thing, but I know you. They hurt you. And, I mean, do you think you're okay from that? It's not that, idiot. I'm just really comfortable with you. I like your personality, too. We laughed and continued to walk down the street, and then Yasmin added, okay, maybe it's the trauma, too. Do you maybe have the college counselor's number in your phone by chance? I should probably get counseling. After our impromptu date, which consisted of more jokes and more crying while eating burgers, we eventually got back to Daniel's question. Why Jack never had any visitors. I began. The thing I don't understand is how not one single family member ever arrives. Well, maybe they all died in a horrific accident, like that one boat that went down in 1912. The Olympic? Yeah, the Olympic, the one that hit the iceberg. Right, but even then the family members all showed up eventually. It just took a couple of years for them to get back from the sea. But not all of them did. Some ended up in the ice and had to be chipped out of it before they could return. But could all of his family be stuck somewhere? It's crazy, but it's possible. Remember that family of missionaries that disappeared? They were all stuck under boulders after the avalanche for a couple hundred years. Maybe his family all died together in a similar way. Yeah, I replied, finally satisfied with the answer that his family had probably all been stuck somewhere after dying in the same place or same way. Yas picked up her phone and silently read a text, then rolled her eyes. Oh, Daniel. What? Yasmin laughed and said, Daniel thinks he murdered them and buried them under his house. What an imagination, she said, making stabbing motions with her steak knife. Her phone buzzed again, but this time what she read gave her a look of mild concern. I stood and walked around to see the message for myself. It was a picture of a news article, revealing that there was an investigation into the suspicious disappearance of the man's family. According to this, they were all at his house until they vanished. As she said it, her face turned pale. Before either of us had a chance to react, Yasmin got another text. It was a selfie of Daniel. He was sneaking through old man Jack's house. We dropped our food and ran. We had to stop him from getting himself killed. When we got on the same block as old man Jack's house, our eyes shot to Jack's driveway. No car, which meant he was out. We didn't know how long he'd be gone, but we had to act now. Without saying a word, we both sprinted as fast as we could down the sidewalk and up to Jack's front door. Still no barricades, like Daniel had said. We were beginning to wonder how much of this he was making up. I shot my hand for the doorknob, but Yasmin grabbed my hand and pulled it back. She shook her head violently and then pointed to an open window. I nodded and then quickly jumped through. Inside, the house was a stereotypical haunted house with cobwebs everywhere. Though that wasn't surprising, since the outside of the house looked like an extra from a horror film, too. With every few steps, a wooden floorboard would creak, keeping our dread on high alert. Okay, we have to find Daniel and convince him to come back with us, Yas said. I agreed and added, if this guy really did murder his family and hide the bodies, he had to have done it so well that even the cops investigating never found them. There's no way we will be able to do what the cops couldn't. Yas nodded and then left to search on her own. I wished she'd stayed with me, but I understood. If we split up, we had a higher likelihood of finding Daniel before old man Jack came back and killed us too. I gulped as the insanity of what we were doing hit me. I walked down a short corridor and found myself in a kitchen. The counter and walls were all disgusting with use. Rust and grime everywhere. No sign of Daniel, though. I quickly searched the room and realized he wasn't in there, and left back to the main entryway. Going up the stairs, I found myself in a big bedroom. This place kept significantly nicer than the kitchen. While everything up here had layers of dust, it wasn't nearly as bad as the grime in the kitchen. Daniel wasn't up here, but I saw a shelving unit with fingerprints on it, having worn off a small layer of dust. Had Daniel been in here? I touched the area absent-mindedly and felt a click as a small section of the shelf jumped out of space. I jumped back, startled, and watched as the shelf rotated into the wall and revealed a primitive secret passageway made of cement and low-hanging wooden beams. I ran down the stairs to find Yasmin, who was back in the entry room. Yas, come up here. Look at this. We ran up the stairs, and I showed her the passage hanging open. She darted in ahead of me, and I ran to keep up. Bare light bulbs hung from strings every 10 feet or so. The passage just kept going, deeper and farther than we expected. And as we continued, we began to get a sinking feeling. Ben, what if his family isn't the only people he's killed? I froze. What do you mean? She turned to face me. This seems like the kind of passage you put a lot of work into. Maybe to hide something? Like bodies. What if he was a serial killer, and his family caught him in the act, and that's why they disappeared? Yasmin's question was answered, as we found ourselves in a subterranean room filled with stone slabs with plaques on them. The floor was dirt, and the ceiling was a mix of cement and more wooden beams. As with the rest of the passage, this room was also not up to code, and as such, I figured had to have been made by hand in secret. With all likelihood, this room wasn't even on a blueprint of the house. As I walked, I made my way to the end of the room, where I found an odd painting, showing him with his family. He had one daughter and his wife. Something was unsettling about the painting, though. Something about Jack's eyes. Yasmin began to read something across the room quietly and then yelled out to me. Hey, Ben, I think I found out what happened. Yasmin was holding an old journal with yellowed pages. According to this, and these are Jack's own words, apparently his daughter was seeing someone, and he didn't like that. So he made the boy disappear. And she didn't like that, so he made her disappear. And his wife didn't like any of it. Just then, we heard shuffling noises begin to come from the stone slabs. It was at this point I realized they weren't slabs at all. They were coffins. We were in Jack's personal mausoleum. I watched in horror as the tops began to slide off, and 10 or more rotting corpses began to climb out of the tombs. I realized that the festival had begun, and if old man Jack kept them locked away every year, then he'd be back any minute to make sure they were secure, if not already. My thinking was interrupted by a thudding noise. It got louder and closer, and it came from the stairs. I grabbed my phone, squeezed it tight, ready to call 911. I turned to see Daniel's body come tumbling out of the long stairway me and Yasmin had just been in, bloody and mangled.
I see you've met my family and a few friends, the voice boomed down the stairs. Thanks for joining us, he said, and I heard as the trapdoor sealed behind him as he left. The returned all continued to shamble up the stairs to try to escape as the room began to fill with gas from the vents in the ceiling. Yasmin and I began to choke, unable to breathe. I pulled up my phone only to realize I'd accidentally turned it off when I was gripping it so tightly. I scrambled to turn the device back on as Yasmin began to cry. I ran up the stairs and tried to pound the door open, but it wouldn't budge. I finally came back down the stairs and embraced Yasmin for what would likely be the last time. She clung to me between sobs, and it broke my heart to see her this scared. I told her that I loved her. She told me the same. Last thing I remember is that stupid company logo glowing up at me from my phone screen and then changing to my phone background and reading, no signal. The next time that I was conscious was today, just now. I can smell my own rot. I can feel my corpse wasting away now. I am one of the returned. I woke up still clutching Yasmin's likewise decaying body. She looked down at herself and began to cry. It had been a year, and old man Jack had just left us rotting down here like a couple of dogs. I looked at my phone and saw that it was off. I tried to turn it on and hoped that some power was left after a year and watched in disbelief as the company logo filled the screen. I looked around, saw old man Jack's daughter looking across the room. I turned it off for you, she said quietly, so that when you returned, you could record a goodbye for your loved ones. I began to cry, even in death. This young woman was as caring and sweet as Yasmin had been, as Yasmin would continue to be when we finally got out of here. That's it. That's the story of how I died.
Me, my best friend, and my girlfriend were murdered by a psychopath named Jack and kept in his secret underground trophy mausoleum. And here, I used to think people were good. Some people genuinely think that humans are good by nature, and that the ideas of such men as Rousseau are paramount to understanding the truth of human nature. It has been suggested that the machinations of society's modern politics and economy are the factors that have given us to ruin. Yet at the same time, we live in an era where biases against race, gender, and religion have been greatly diminished, largely due directly to our ties to modern politics and economic factors. At the end of the day, this story shares a very simple moral idea. Original sin, the concept that all are broken and exist with evil natures, is alive and well, and we can see it in our entire cast. Is Daniel free from guilt, having no conscience of how greatly he offends the Return? Can we say that Ben is completely pure in his interest in Yasmin? Or did you pick up on the somewhat seedy hints that were dropped? The only party without obvious guilt is Yasmin, but had this story included a few candid moments of Yasmin's life outside the story, we'd see her eyeing Ben the same way as he eyed her. All have sinned. Are even you free from guilt? Not a question that desires an answer, but a question that does demand one. Thank you for listening to this tale by Midnight Sideshow Productions. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify or Podbean. Have a wonderful day.